Welcome to a very special Jalen and Jacoby. Jalen, you directed the Fab Five, 30 for 30 documentary.
Lloyd Banks said it. I ain't from Michigan, but I'm in the Fab Five.
And Jody Avergan of the 30 for 30 podcast series came here to the Seaport and spoke to you mainly, but I was
Jody
also
from Baby
there.
Boy?
Nope, different Jody. And what they did is that he really got you to open up. You said you had 20 minutes for it. It ended up being like 50 minutes because you opened up. You said some things into microphones that you're probably going to regret. I loved every second of it. And it turned out to be a very revealing and excellent interview about not just your experience with the Fab Five, your experience making the movie, but your life in general and how it's changed over the years.
So as a public figure, when we are so very fortunate to do multiple interviews, you know that if you've said something to stir the pot, because it happens really fast.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a trending topic. It could be something that everybody's discussing instantly. And so I didn't realize that that didn't come out yet until right now.
Well, that interview is out. Not only is it out, it is coming up next.
Oh,
subscribe
wow.
to the 30 for 30 podcast series. We really appreciate your support of Jalen and Jacoby. Since we'll be dark for a little while, we want to give you some bonus content. Here it is, 30 for 30 podcast, behind the scenes of the Fab Five documentary featuring Jalen Rose, Jody Avergan, and myself, David Jacoby.
When someone has your back in sports, we call it teamwork. Knowing someone's ready to help you out on the road, that has a name too, and that name is OnStar. If you've ever been faced with something as terrible as vehicle theft, OnStar can help. OnStar has the power of stolen vehicle slowdown. It's a feature that enables an advisor to work with law enforcement to get your stolen ride back, slowing down your vehicle enough so that authorities have a chance to apprehend the crook who took it. OnStar can get your vehicle back to you quicker and safer. If you're ever faced with a theft, you can turn to OnStar, because at a moment like that, the last thing you want is to be alone. Get OnStar on your team today. OnStar, be safe out there. OnStar is available on Chevrolet, Buick, GMC, and Cadillac. Requires select paid plan, cell reception, GPS signal, and working electrical system. Doesn't prevent theft, damage, or loss. Details at OnStar.com. Welcome to 30 for 30 Podcasts. My name is Jody Avergan. Today, we wrap up our 10th anniversary series of podcasts, looking back at many of our notable films here at ESPN, what impact those films had, and exploring how the story from those films has continued to develop. Today's film falls into that latter category of stories that continue to evolve, a story that just this last spring saw what might be the beginning of the end of a long-running stalemate in the college basketball world.
Is the Fab Five back? The hiring of Juwan Howard as Michigan's head coach and turning heads in college basketball.
That announcement showed that the ice between the University of Michigan and its most high-profile set of former basketball stars had begun to thaw. And just how things became so fraught between Juwan Howard, his teammates, and the university was one of the themes explored in the ESPN film The Fab Five.
You wanted to see them. They were must-see television.
Rose on the run. 3-on-2 to King.
Fab Five came in there with their own rules as a whole bunch of young bucks with quote-unquote no experience.
In the fall of 1991, five freshman basketball players, Chris Webber, Jalen Rose, Juwan Howard, Jimmy King, and Ray Jackson, arrived on campus in Ann Arbor, Michigan. By the end of that season, they'd earned a Final Four berth, a national championship game appearance, and become a cultural phenomenon. If you wore baggy shorts and black socks in the early 90s, the Fab Five had a lot to do with that.
If you were young and black, you were like, those are my boys. If you were old and white, you were going, oh my God, the criminals are taking over our sports and they're influencing our children.
Their first season saw a loss to hated Duke. Their second season together ended in another heartbreaking and this time infamous loss, again in the national championship game.
Webber brings it into the front court. They have no timeouts remaining.
Oh, he causes too many timeouts. That's a technical foul.
He called a timeout. Michigan doesn't have any.
After that, Chris Webber left Michigan for the NBA, but that was not the end of the Fab Five story. Years later, a scandal centering around Webber and Ed Martin, a booster to the program, brought NCAA sanctions onto Michigan, brought the banners down out of the rafters and hardened what had already become a distant relationship between Weber, the school, and the rest of the Fab Five.
Chris Weber has been indicted on charges he lied to a grand jury about his dealings with a Michigan booster.
We had to vacate all those wins and that we had to take down the championship banners from Chrysler Arena.
Rocked me to the core because we have put so much into that. It's like snatching your life dreams away. When you mess up, there are consequences.
Now, you may recall that earlier this week, we had some of our fellow ESPN podcasters on discussing some of their favorite 30 for 30 films. For today's episode, a different colleague is here to talk about the film. He was not only the subject of the Fab Five, but also helped produce it. Jalen Rose is one of the hosts of the daily TV show Jalen and Jacoby, a show that originally started as a podcast and grew into a TV show. I recently sat down with Jalen in the green room near his studio. Forgive the sound of the air conditioner in the background. His co-host, David Jacoby, also joined us, and I was eager to talk to both of them about the state of Jalen's relationship with the University of Michigan and specifically Chris Weber, who we should note did not participate in the film and has had a chilly relationship with Jalen in the years since. I learned a lot of new things in this interview. I think you will too. Here we go. Jalen, Jacoby, welcome to the 30 for 30 podcast. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Of course.
You are far too kind.
I will say that long before I worked at ESPN, I was a fan of Jalen Jacoby, the podcast. I listened, and I remember this film. You talked a lot about the making of it. And I was just wondering, you know, kind of why you felt like you were so open about that and why you wanted to talk about it as that process was going through.
The one thing that I felt was important wasn't only telling the story, it was the timing of it. Mm-hmm. Chris Weber had a separation from the university that I wanted to make sure, if he was going to be a part of it, which he initially agreed to be a part of it, he can actually speak freely and it give him a chance to decompress a lot of the things that he probably had in his head or in his heart about what took place in Ann Arbor. So telling the story, the timing of the story, and getting everybody to participate initially was the base of trying to get it up and going.
I mean, Jacoby, did you realize there was all these conversations happening behind the scenes?
No. You know what I mean? Like, this is obviously, anyone who is of my age and loves basketball the way I do, the Fab Five was, one of the most impactful basketball teams that has ever taken the floor. Like, college, pro, whatever. Like, there is no other team that is branded the way they did and had the effect on culture the way they did, especially when you are my age. And I remember during this film, you know, part of this film is also in a weird way catalyst towards Jalen and Jacoby, because you went on Bill Simmons' podcast, formerly the BS Report, to do an interview promoting it. And I remember driving to Bristol and listening to it and being like, I really like this guy. I was like, this guy's good. I mean, this guy might have a career in front of him.
How about that? And the beauty of telling the story is, the thing that gets understated is from 1995 to when the sanctions became something for public consumption and legitimacy, that was like 2000, 2001. They didn't acknowledge us during that period.
Why do you think that is?
The university wanted to get away from what they felt we brought to the table, which was actually one of the greatest things that happened for the university. It's almost like when you have a player-friendly coach and then you make a change, it's like we're going to get a disciplinarian and or the opposite. So for as much acclaim, notoriety, help student enrollment, definitely help the bottom line. Once we left campus, it was like, whew, let's take a deep breath. We need to recover. We need to take the university back. We don't want the team to be identified and the sports program to be identified by the people in uniform. We want it to be dictated by the university and the faces be the head coaches, like it had always been in the past. It gets lost that from 95 to like 2000, when there wasn't an NCAA separation, when there wasn't any discipline, that we still didn't get the level of appreciation from our university. No numbers got retired. No tributes took place. None of that actually happened before the Chris Webber sanctions actually became public.
Jacoby, did you feel like this film was part of a moment where I felt like it was part of a moment where people were starting to realize a lot of what's sort of broken at the heart of college sports?
Yes.
You know,
and this team was really that, because when you're in your young teens and you're a fan, you're just like, oh, these guys are gods. Like, they're playing basketball. They look different than everybody else. They're cooler than any team I've ever seen. They got bald heads. I'm getting some black socks. Mom, let me get some black socks. Mom, I need shorts double XL. Mom, you know, like, I want to shave my head. She's like, no. But then it's like, but it's like they were
if you only knew.
Cultural influencers at that time. And then when the film comes out, you realize there's a business behind all this. And they kind of missed out on that part of it. And you can influence an entire generation of children. You can swing pop culture a little further towards hip-hop than it was previously. But you can also still be somewhat manipulated and taken advantage of while doing so.
And he saw his jersey in the window for $75, the number 4. And he said, they're selling that for $75, and that goes to somebody, and I have to borrow money to put gas in my car. And I remember thinking to myself, he's not coming back here.
I didn't feel like a college kid anymore. I felt like a professional athlete that wasn't getting paid. I remember we were in Chicago one time, and we went downtown to the Nike outlet, and we walked past a display. It said, Fab 5 Nikes. That's when you start realizing having your own shoe doesn't necessarily put money in your pocket. Those are the things I think the film was able to expose. And now that Juwan has the job, I have to make sure I stress. Any hatchet, any negative energy, any unrest that existed between the Fab Five, myself, and the University of Michigan is 1,000% over, done, and buried.
And is that because their move in hiring Juwan kind of showed you something, or is it because you're just saying we got to move forward?
Well, no,
and
it showed me something. Because over from 1994 to 2018, both sides just tolerated each other. When the university felt like it was in their best interest to represent remnants of the Fab Five, they did it, and or vice versa. But they really showed their level of respect for what we accomplished by hiring Juwan as the head coach, and he deserved the opportunity by the work and the discipline and the sacrifice and the years of coaching that he put in.
Going into the film, I mean, you get pretty personal there. You know, you talk about your dad, some of the other relationships. Was that something you were preparing for going in, or is it just one of those things where it kind of comes out as you're talking?
So the one thing I told myself about the Fab Five doc is I wanted this to be the Bible of the story, and when this is played on television, I'll never have to answer any questions or ever have to have any regrets. I'm going to say exactly what I feel about everything, whether it's University of Michigan, my disdain for Duke, whatever it was, I was going to say exactly how I felt, and whoever didn't like it, so what? That was my approach. That was my mentality.
But then came their first real challenge. A matchup against the defending national champions, the Duke Blue Devils.
For me, Duke was personal. I hated Duke, and I hated everything I felt Duke stood for. Schools like Duke didn't recruit players like me. I felt like they only recruited black players that were Uncle Toms.
The Duke thing. Do either of you remember what it was like when that quote came out? Because it came out before the film came out. There was a firestorm.
And then Grant
before
wrote
the film.
A piece in the New York Times, right?
Yep. Grant Hill wrote a piece. It was on the Times most emailed list for about a week. 100,000 people shared it on Facebook in the first couple days that it came out. I mean, it was a thing. And it was a thing before the film came out. So do you remember trying to like scramble, or were you saying, oh, this is good?
The only scramble, I did one scramble. I picked up the phone and called Grant Hill.
Oh.
Who's actually a friend of mine to this day. And what the world don't know, we died laughing. Because the first thing I said was, who did you pay to write that?
Well, yeah, let's go back up a little bit. So people that might not be at the time, you and I were involved in this. But it was like, You said what about Duke and Grant Hill in the film?
I basically was trying to give people a snapshot of what I felt as a recruit, what many players felt as NCAA participants, past and present, what a lot of fans and media felt, but nobody actually had the courage to say. But it is uncomfortable when you say it.
Well, you phrased it in a particular – I mean, you used a two-word phrase.
Well, that's different. So I'm going to go there.
Okay.
So I talked about the type of player that Duke recruited and why I was a McDonald's All-American and got letters from every school in the country but didn't get one from them. But my teammate, Chris Webber, who went to Detroit Country Day, did. The only difference is the high schools that we went to, okay, and our – backgrounds and our dynamics. I came from a single-parent dynamic. He came from a two-parent dynamic. That's what they were recruiting. That's one. The other thing was the type of black athlete that they were recruiting. And it showed me the ignorance of people and of media types because they took my comments as something I was saying in 2011, not as something that I thought in 1987, 88, 89, 90. And so that created, you know, a sort of firestorm. And I also in the doc acknowledged that that was an irresponsible, undisciplined, immature way to describe it. But usually that's what teenagers do. Do things that aren't well thought out.
What did, tell me about the phone call with Grant.
The phone call with Grant. So I reached out to him. Yo, what's happening? And then the first thing I said was, because I know, for those that don't know, like, his mother went to school with Hillary Clinton. They were roommates. And when I read the op-ed piece, I'm like, somebody in the White House wrote that for you. I'm like, you ain't write that. And he understood where I was coming from. And I understood where he was coming from because he had so many people in his world. Like, you gonna let them talk to you like that? You gonna let them talk? Like, y'all were the back-to-back champions. You beat them four times. I know you ain't gonna just let them clown you like that. So to represent his best interests and to have a voice for himself, I welcomed and appreciated him speaking up for the dynamics of Duke basketball. No problems at all.
Jacoby, what do you think is the legacy of this team?
It's interesting. When you talk about legacy, a lot of people look at the culture stuff, right? A lot of people think about the baggy shorts and the bald heads and the black socks and the huaraches, right? But when you watch the doc, I think one thing that it reminds you of is the basketball. You know, like, I think they played with so much joy and passion and rage. Like, when you watch that documentary, they do things that are not allowed in college and professional basketball now. Like, after they dunk, they taunt. After they score, they taunt. After a timeout, they taunt.
Jalen was one of the great trash talkers of all time.
I understood that the mental aspect of the game was just as important as the physical.
And there's Jalen Rose going after Leighton a little bit.
Trash talking in sports originally from the playgrounds was never about getting in your face. It was about getting in your head. And that's what these kids were doing. When they talked trash, they were getting in your head. But it got distorted by people who weren't really that familiar with what they were seeing. When you're not familiar, you can be afraid.
The legacy will always be the socks and the shorts and the huaraches, but no one cares if you don't win. None of that matters if you don't win. And I think that this is, I would put the UNLV team up there, that this is probably in my lifetime, which is 40 years, the most impactful college basketball team. But I think that people use the word impactful and they talk about the impact on the culture, but I really think the basketball gets overlooked sometimes. That when you watch that film, watch the basketball.
For me, this is what our legacy is. We were smarter than people gave us credit for. That was our legacy. We were like, oh, okay, we must wear Nikes, but we're not wearing those ugly ones. Y'all need to go back to the lab and bring us something that we like. And then when they knew we were serious, the Nike rep came back and he had like a big bag of like 20 shoes and he just dumped them all on the floor and we picking them up, looking like, nah, we don't like these. Nah, we don't like these. We picked the Huarache. Nike didn't pick the Huarache. We decided that's the shoe we want to rock. We decided that we wanted to have a voice and a personality, that we weren't going to be muzzled, that five people can go to the same school and not just pick a college and try to get 20 points per game and go to the league, because that's what people were doing at that time too, trying to be the best player where they went to school. So there were so many things that were memorable, and it was the best time of basketball in my life.
After the break, Jalen discusses how Michigan's hiring of Juwan Howard is not just helping to heal past wounds, it has changed how he feels about a controversial keepsake from the Fab Five era. 30 for 30 podcast is brought to you by Delta Airlines. Delta flies to 300 cities around the world. That's 300 cities where everyone does the same things you do. That's 300 cities where the people in those 300 cities think they're the only ones who know about that one place. 300 cities where people miss someone in one of the other 299 cities. 300 cities where people sing in the car or in the shower or both, poorly. Delta isn't flying to 300 cities merely to bring us together, but to show us we're not that far apart in the first place. Delta, keep climbing. 30 for 30 podcasts are brought to you by State Farm. Whether in the game of basketball or in life, having an MVP on your side makes all the difference. In basketball, a multi-talented elite playmaker who can be called upon in crunch time not only helps the team succeed, but makes the players around them better. In life, your State Farm agent strives to be your MVP, ready to come through in the clutch when you need it the most. Whether it's buying a new home, coping with a car accident, or building the foundation for your future, you can feel confident knowing you don't have to go it alone. With a State Farm agent on your team, you'll be well prepared for whatever life brings your way.
Jalen initiated the baggy shorts. We were tired of the little shorts. So we went to coach one day after practice, and we say, Fish, look, we need to be comfortable.
We can't have those shorts you see in Utah with John Stockton, Karl Malone, and we don't want to look like that. And we like the shorts like how Michael Jordan wear with the Bulls, but longer.
Bottom line, it came down to coach. He said, if y'all decide to go with these baggy shorts and y'all promise y'all will win me games, then I'll do it.
On the clothing. The shorts seem to be getting shorter. The socks, are people wearing white socks again? Do you feel your legacy eroding away?
Nah, that's just a couple of people. Those are people that are actually trying to do that.
No, but you watch the NCAA tournament. Like John Morant, you know, he's wearing shorts that are like a couple inches above his knees.
Nah, the people that are doing it are making a distinct effort to say, I want to wear short
shorts.
That's
just fashion.
Yes.
I mean, that's, you know, 15 years ago, we were all wearing huge baggy jeans. Then 2 years ago, everyone had skinny jeans. That's just how it goes, because once something becomes cool, it's not cool anymore. So you have to kind of zag. And
yes.
One thing I want to say about the legacy of this team is prevalent in today's NBA is there's two words that have kind of been popular this summer: player empowerment.
Yeah.
Player empowerment. Oh, Kawhi Leonard engineered Paul George, and Paul George had 3 years left in his contract, and he forced the team to trade him here. And I think that in college basketball at the time, it was, I'm a great player, I like this coach, I'm gonna go to the school and we'll see who else is gonna, you know, be part of my class. There was never these guys having conversations without coaches involved, without other people saying the five of us are gonna form a team, and kind of forcing that team down Michigan's throat in a way that wasn't happening in college basketball. Still hasn't happened in college basketball.
That's
since.
What you just said is why we weren't embraced when we left. Because we forced it. You just said it. And it was like a firestorm of, we want the popularity and we want the money, but we don't want them to be brash. We don't want them celebrating after every play. And the University of Michigan, like most major colleges, is really conservative. And all of a sudden, you have these five black players on the floor, And that made a lot of people uncomfortable that we were outspoken the way we were.
The cultural way that these young African Americans were playing the game, which was basically a street game transferred inside Chrysler Arena, was not the way that alumni were used to seeing Michigan basketball.
We got nasty letters from alumni of Michigan because of that.
Very racist in tone and proudly saying that they were Michigan graduates.
This is not, you know, the Michigan way.
I think those things made us come together as a team. People trying to break us down from every angle, you know, that brought us together.
It taught us this is brotherhood. This is the time when we all got joined together and came even closer as a family.
You mentioned at the beginning the efforts to get everyone on board. How close was Chris to being on board for this? And then I guess, do you want to talk at all about where things stand with him now?
Sure. I sat with him at my loft in downtown LA when the 30 for 30 projects just started. And I was showing him all of the projects that had happened and told him that I was pitching one that hopefully ESPN would pick up. Are you down? He said, yeah. He was the first person I actually asked because I knew the backdrop. Rand Jimmy were down. Steve Fisher was down. Brian Dutcher. Like, everybody was excited about doing it. And here's what I want people to pay attention to. From 1994 to 2011, good, bad, or indifferent, we never said nothing about the Fab Five publicly, especially negative, or Chris Webber. Never. None of us. We were down like four flat tires. Whatever happened stayed amongst us. The documentary was a chance for everybody to let it go. And it would have been a great opportunity for C-Web to do the same thing. And I'll never forget telling them, this is going to be the Bible of the story. This is your chance to sit in the room with me and say, huh, I thought I had a booger in my nose. I don't want that part. Oh, I don't like the way I said that. I don't like that part. I don't like my shirt. Let's shoot it again. Like, this was our chance to be on the cutting room floor and own what took place. And as an adult, he chose not to. And I don't hold a grudge to him to doing it, but I think it would have been a great opportunity for him.
You think he still has a chance to come out and talk and sort of say all those things?
I think since Juwan is the coach, at his time, he will. And for me, that's not as important anymore because it didn't stop the avalanche. See, a lot of people felt like if it's four of them, not five of them, then we can lock the door on them and not let them in. But once Juwan kicked down the door and became the head coach of the team, all of that's over. The hatchet is buried as far as I'm concerned. All I'm going to do is follow our leader, Juwan, do whatever I can to support the program. And if I'm the only one at the game, cool. If all five of us at the game, cool. It don't even matter to me no more. It's over.
I think one of the through threads of the movie, if I'm not mistaken, the bookend of the movie is the banners in the storage unit somewhere on campus. We going to see those in the rafters.
Probably shouldn't say this. I don't care. Don't even matter to me no more.
You're lying.
I swear. You know you're my brother. I am not lying. You ain't heard me say nothing. I don't care. Because I'd rather see Juwan standing on the sideline than the banners hanging in the rafters. That's something that you got to look at it this way. I saw that taken from me. Easy. And nobody cared. And I probably shouldn't say this, but I don't bite my tongue. We didn't win it anyway.
That's fair.
So I don't care.
What about statues?
No, I want a statue.
Okay.
I don't care about those.
I don't want to have to wheel you out there for the statue celebration. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to have to explain to you while you're all broken. You got dementia. You know what I mean? Just be like, Jalen, this is what it looks like.
Right.
This,
you know, I'm 102.
It's like bronze. Yeah, exactly. I don't, like, we got to do this one. We can still celebrate afterwards, okay?
I agree. The University of Michigan doesn't owe me anything. I always felt like the thing that they owed me that they truly never could give me. until they hire Juwan. So I don't care about the banners. The only thing I care about is Steve Fisher's legacy. That's what I care about.
Coach, now how do you feel when people say, you know, your team is very undisciplined? How does that make you feel, Coach?
Well, one, I know our players are undisciplined. But two, I think I'm the greatest coach in the world. And four, the only reason we're here is because we're great coaches.
Can we all have $100?
Turn that camera off.
I hate walking on that campus and don't see a picture of Steve Fisher anywhere. Don't see any type of tribute of him anywhere. Like, he won a championship in 89 as the head coach. He recruited the Fab Five and went to two more championships. He got as many championships as Tom Izzo, as Jim Boeheim, as John Calipari, as Bill Self. Many championships as all of them. I want to see Coach Fisher get into the Hall of Fame for what he accomplished. If the banners get hung, great.
The legacy for me is a fantastic group of young people that are now a fantastic group of adults. When I have a great win, inevitably I'll get a call from one or two of them. When we have a tough loss, I'll get something. Hang in there, Coach. You're doing a great job. The love is still there.
They made me who I am. Regardless to whatever happens in my life, that is close as I will get to blood brothers.
Jalen Rose and David Jacoby. You can watch them on ESPN2 every day, and you can subscribe to the Jalen and Jacoby podcast. And you should follow Jacoby on Instagram. He's got really cute kids. If you want to watch the Fab Five, you can find it and the entire 30 for 30 film archive on demand on our new streaming service, ESPN Plus. Sign up for a free trial through the ESPN app or use the link in the episode notes. And that's it for this anniversary series. We did 10 episodes covering a bunch of films over the last 10 years. I had a really great time doing this. I learned a lot. We certainly covered a lot of my favorites, but I'm sure we missed some films. So if there are any that we didn't touch on that you love or you have any follow-up, let us know. You can find me on Twitter at Jody Avergan, that's Jody with a Y, or email us 30for30podcasts@espn.com. Special thanks to everyone who helped put this anniversary series together: Libby Geist, Aaron Leiden, Gentry Kirby, Jenna Anthony, Catherine Sankey, Jennifer Thorpe, Deirdre Fenton, Vindy Anton, Jeff Arias, Samantha Dowd, Eve Wolf. Nina Ernest produced a number of these episodes. A big shout out to Mitra Kaboli for engineering help on all of these. And an even bigger shout out to Ryan Nantel, who helped take the lead on this whole endeavor, all while getting ready to become a new dad, which he just did. So congratulations to Ryan and his new family. And another shout out to Connor Shell, Bill Simmons, and John Dahl. Thank you for starting 30 for 30 10 years ago. Now, the exciting part. The next thing you will hear in this feed will be the trailer for our next big season of original audio documentaries. This one is almost 2 years in the works. It's a huge story. I think it's some of the best work we've done so far. Basketball, Los Angeles, race, scandal. This story has it all. It's really important and a great listen. So check back in about a week and you will know what I'm talking about. My name is Jody Avergan. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back soon with more 30 for 30 podcasts.